Hello.
Welcome back
to Sustainability in the Sea.
This is your next episode of Stoked on Solutions.
If this is your first time joining Sustainability in the Sea on a Stoked on Solutions episode, Stoked on Solutions is basically where me and Alex come back from a trip and tell you everything that we learned from the trip that can help inform ocean conservation solutions. So the solutions that we saw in that area, the solutions that we got ideas for when we came back, and mm-hmm. we've done two now.
Yeah.
We did the San Juans in Washington,
checking out orcas.
What's the other one? Oh, the Galapagos.
Ah, the Galapagos.
The Galapagos.
Did so San Juan and the Galapagos.
Yeah. Anyway, so now today we're doing Bali, Indonesia, and I cannot wait to tell you about this.
Yeah. So we just got back not too long ago.
And we got a lot to say. This episode is for people who have always wanted to go to Bali, who mm-hmm. are ocean conservationists and have explored internships and fellowship opportunities in Indonesia, mm-hmm. and for people who are really just curious about how other parts of the world are implementing ocean conservation solutions at the community-based level. This episode's for you. Welcome back to Sustainability and the Sea. Okay, so the first thing that we're going to start off with is just a little bit of context of how Bali in Indonesia has been portrayed to people like us throughout our entire life.
And we are prime, like, target audience for Bali. We grew up when Bali was it. That's where everyone wanted to go.
Yes, and we grew up in early days influencer Instagram, which was everyone just going to Bali. So we've been wanting to go forever. We were going to go, and this trip got canceled, and we decided to go because our vouchers were expiring and my best friend lives there. And we thought, why not? It's better. We've always wanted to go, right?
Yeah, let's go. Let's just do it.
So I'm just going to start right now. We're going to start with some hot takes for those of you listening that might want to go to Bali. Mm-hmm. I am deeply upset with every single influencer who has glamorized the beauty of Bali through the cafes and the spas and the spirituality, because It almost gave dystopian mm-hmm. vibes.
Agreed.
And we're going to start on this little negative note, but I think it's really important for everybody to know, because I wish someone had told us this before we went to Bali. What's the first thing that really upset you?
First of all, the pollution. It was like plastic and rubbish everywhere. It was like you would have a picturesque, perfect view right here. And then as soon as you went right here, a little bit wider, plastic everywhere, trash. It was tough to see.
Mine was watching people not acknowledge, speak to, or in a lot of ways respect and connect with the local community and residents. Mm-hmm. For those that don't know, Bali is a tourism hub for mostly Australians. It's like a big bachelor party, a big spring break. Mm-hmm.
Really all over, from people from all over.
Yeah, from all over, but mostly Australians. And it was very, very difficult for me to watch the ways that people were treated.
Mm-hmm. And the Balinese people had like the top-notch hospitality. They were so nice and generous and willing to help you with anything, and still most people would just like...
Yeah, they're not trying to speak Balinese. They're not trying to... there was gratitude. It was mostly also like not just like individuals. Like, it's a systemic thing. Mm-hmm. Like, these cafes are Instagrammable. They're picturesque. They're 100% vegan. They're all healthy food. But then it's like, if you zoom out, the overdevelopment of different areas of Bali are replacing rice fields and forms of livelihood for local people that were autonomous. So like running your own rice field was an autonomous form of income. And now it's completely reliant on other people coming and having these like picturesque experiences mm-hmm. to post about it.
And yeah, I was talking to a handful of local folks, and they said that during the pandemic, everyone was hit so hard just because that's where like 90% of their income comes from, is the tourism economy.
Yeah. The other part was we went in, it was not even the summertime, like the hottest part of the year, mm-hmm. but there was extreme heat. And I remember feeling like, you know, I'm from Arizona, 120 degrees. We live in Hawaii, super humid in the summer. this hit different in a way that I can't, I feel like we can't relate to you on a podcast. Like,
it was, yeah, it was miserable. And there was some heat aggression going on, which just means that
mostly by me.
Some of us would get frustrated very easily just because we were hot.
And it was a very intimate experience with the ways that extreme heat will cause more social tension and aggression and violence on the as the climate crisis worsens. And also, you're just like running from air conditioned area to air conditioned area. And then you go outside and you're like, what? And the, yeah, what's the last one?
The last one I was going to say was air pollution. Like, because they don't have a lot of regulations on like vehicles and such, it was like you could hardly breathe in some of the more densely populated areas.
Yeah, most people wear masks so that they're not inhaling all that dust. And for context, like in the US, there's a lot of like regulations on like you have to build buildings under these certain building requirements, or you can't build too many buildings in one area, or like, you know, emissions testing for your cars, or there can only be so many cars or whatever. None of that exists. And so when we were going in between towns, it was like, stay inside your car. Like, I was like, let's just roll down the windows. And it's like, no, don't like, you can't breathe. And I have really sensitive lungs. Like, I always talk about how, like, I, you know, when I'm in LA, I feel it just because it's a big city. And it felt like we only got relief when we were by the ocean.
Yeah, it was, that part was tough.
And then physically, like seeing, talking to people who have lived there a long time and seeing how fast it's developed because of the demand, how many people are moving there, how many people are like
just visiting in general, I feel like. It's the like population is so much higher than I think it should be.
Yeah. And I just feel like if you're gonna go, like, go for the real experience. And by real experience, I mean like connect with the locals, give back, experience Indonesia that's not in these like tourist hubs that are, have been posted on Instagram for the last 10 years. Like, there's just a lot of beautiful, enriching opportunity and experiences that you can have there. And none of them have been posted online.
Yeah. Be a conscious traveler. Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
And it's so much more rewarding.
Yeah, and we learned so much from the people we did connect with locally.
All right, let's get to some solutions then. Let's change this.
Okay, Nusa Penida?
Yeah.
Okay, so for context, for Nusa Penida, it's an island offshore. It's a protected area. It's a, which is, I was like, oh, we have to go here because I want to see how the ocean underwater compares being in a protected area. Most people go to Nusa Penida, go to these like beautiful cliff sides that have been Instagram viral for years, and then leave on the last ferry out. And so that means that at night, like, it's just people who are staying on the island or people who live on the island.
It's pretty nice. It's kind of sleepy.
That was my favorite part, was going there. And Nusa Penida is a dive hub, so you can go there to scuba dive, you can go there to free dive. And
the diving is beautiful.
Yeah, and we did a lot of due diligence to connect with local conservation organizations, and I think that that is our first solution.
So the first organization we connected with was Nuansa Palau Nioman. He's the
founder
and lead of that organization, and they do coral restoration.
Yeah, and he's been doing it for what, like 7 years?
7 years. So they were actually able to take us out, and we were able to help them fragment and replant corals all in an afternoon. It was crazy.
It was crazy. It was super shallow water. So for context, Indonesia is in the Coral Triangle, which is basically like this convergence area of all these different currents that come from the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. And because of that, not only are the currents ripping, it's like literally dangerous if you're scuba diving, but or even snorkeling, but the currents are ripping. But because the currents are ripping, it's bringing like a lot of different
nutrients
and temperature water to the reefs. So reefs there are used to water that can be like 85 degrees Fahrenheit or like 40 degrees Fahrenheit, like in the same day. And because of that, they're really thermally resilient. And that makes it like such a hot spot for coral restoration to thrive, because as the planet gets warmer, these are the corals that are already adapted to a warming, changing environment. And I think that we saw that firsthand with the diversity.
Mm-hmm. It was so cool. I don't know if it's quite a 40 degree Fahrenheit swing.
Yeah, okay, that was an estimate,
A little bit dramatic, but still, they are used to much warmer temperatures and much more dramatic swings than elsewhere.
So if you want to see the ocean there, like, definitely go scuba diving, but also, like, what I thought was so cool, you guys, I just found them and reached out and was like,
please. Just sent them a WhatsApp.
Yeah, but they're doing coral restoration. They work with Sea Trees, who we've had on the podcast, if you want to listen to that. They work with
Only One
and mm-hmm. Ocean Gardener. Mm-hmm. So they're plugged in, and we got to see his, like, garden, basically, that he started 7 years ago.
Yeah, it was crazy how drastic it was. It was, like, pretty much dead everywhere. And then we'd come across this giant coral patch, and it was really weird. It was, like, kind of like a perfect square. And then I was snorkeling, and he was snorkeling. Neoman was snorkeling. A couple other of his team were scuba diving. And he pops his head out, and he was like, Alex, look at this. This is my first one 7 years ago. And it was just the most crazy thing. We're going to have a YouTube up soon, so check that one out. But just seeing the work and progress that he's done was so cool.
The other thing is when we interviewed him and we're talking story with him, he told us they just started this thing called Nuansu Palau Ecotourism, which is an opportunity for future visitors to Nusa Penida, like potentially you guys, mm-hmm. to connect with them. And you have options, donation-based or for a small fee, to go and do ocean conservation work. So they super have... Cool. This is it, guys. This is the biggest solution. I wish we had this in Hawaii all over. We are starting to, but, like, the idea, what do they have? They have, you can go plant coral with them. Mm-hmm.
Mangrove restoration.
Go restore mangroves. And then I think they seaweed have farms. Seaweed farms.
Super cool.
And so you do, like, an excursion. You learn about it. You learn about the area. You get back to the local community. And, like, this is a huge opportunity for Nusa Penida, because it attracts divers and ocean people from all over the world to come to this, like, biodiversity hotspot.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite part, was getting to do coral restoration with them. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. I've never done before. And like we were talking about earlier, like, going to Bali was so, like, oh, it's so beautiful. There's surf, there's beaches. But then when I got in the water to do this restoration, it was just totally different.
It was totally different. And earlier that day, we had gone scuba diving with, like, a Paddy Dive Center. And mm-hmm. we had seen the true biodiversity and health and resilience of these reef ecosystems and in a marine protected area. And I was just gasping. And it reminded me how much I believe in conservation education through dive programs. So, like, dive centers and dive instructors are taking you out and providing a service, but embedding conservation education into that is so important. Mm-hmm.
There's so much potential for what could be learned and therefore taught in a scenario like that.
Yeah, and I think that it's hard to, like, put it on the dive center, like, do one more thing, right? But I feel like if you had a third party come in and teach the conservation or whatever, it mm-hmm. could really enrich the dive while making sure that you're leaving with more knowledge of how to protect the ocean. That's, like, one of my future dreams to do at Future Swell, is to provide curricula to dive centers. So I think coral restoration was one of my favorite parts too.
Nice. What other solutions?
Those were two solutions. So the coral restoration is off the charts in mm-hmm. Bali. And it's not just, it's happening in other areas, but we just saw it at Nusa Penida. Mm-hmm. Check out Nuansu Palau's ecotourism Instagram and definitely connect with them if you're going to the area. You can do it in 1 or 2 days. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was, I guess let's talk about the waste. The waste was hard. Alex touched on it earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, plastic pollution is a huge, huge, huge issue there. Like, things are single use.
Everything's single use.
The waste is everywhere. They don't have great waste infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. And so while we were there, one of their largest landfills was actually on fire. And it was, like, it was big news.
And we were, like, extreme heat, waste. Yeah,
not looking good. It's a lot of emissions.
Methane, air pollution, like, all of it at once with this one issue. Mm-hmm. And then, like, we look around and, like, everyone's, like, eating their vegan smoothie and taking photo shoots.
With their plastic cup. But what we did notice...
It was just dystopian. That's all I know with that comment.
But what we did notice was, other than that, like, heavy, like, plastic within the tourism economy, a lot of things were made out of natural materials.
Because it's a developing region, they're innovative and they center mm-hmm. reuse practices, which I think we've seen that some of the most sustainable practices come from lower income communities and people, and that we can just return back to that. Like, I went on one of our off days, I went and did pottery because I love pottery. And I noticed here in the States, they always use like a plastic bin, and everything is, there's like a single use like base, and you're using kind of the same one from Amazon, and that's just like what they offer. Mm-hmm. But there, they had just like a metal slab that you, or not a metal, a wooden slab that you reuse. And he's like, you know, we just clean it off and then we just reuse it. And it's like embedded into the practices in businesses too. And
this is so easy to do.
The sustainable materials were off the charts. Like everything was made of bamboo.
Yes. So many bamboo like products, which is super cool.
You
like,
saw houses being built from bamboo.
Yeah. Houses were being built. I also noticed like, and this is me being nerdy about like building stuff, but the way that they were like paving like cement and roads and stuff was just like using like rocks and mud and like mixtures of stuff, whereas here in the States it's you come up with this giant like cement truck, and which is pumped full of chemicals and a bunch of emissions that are put into it, and then they have it spin and then it pours it out, and you're like, oh, look how easy it is. But it's like, that is so bad for the environment. Whereas mm-hmm. like if you're just using like
rocks
and gravel from like a mill down the street or something, like the impact is great.
The zero waste stores were everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of access to local food there. So like Bali's obviously an island, but like Hawaii's an island too, but local food is more expensive if you're getting local produce than imported areas. Whereas in Bali, it's really, really easy to eat food that is grown in the area or like didn't have like a huge emission footprint to get to you. Mm-hmm. I thought that was awesome. And like really just like the reuse and sustainability mentality is embedded to these businesses.
Yeah, which is super cool. And there are also a handful of organizations that do cleanups for the trash and plastic that does accumulate on their beaches and their rivers and such.
You may have seen on our other platforms that we met up with Four Oceans local cleanup team there, which for context, like they work 5 days a week.
6 days.
6 days a week.
Which is a lot.
And they're cleaning all over Bali because there's no shortage of work to be done. Mm-hmm. And
it's like a crew of like 8 to 10 people. Mm-hmm. And they are so hardworking. Like that was the first like experience or adventure we got to do.
Yeah, we did it on the first day.
And I was like, these guys are my heroes. Just how like really excited to be there they are. And also just like committed to the work that they're doing. It's not like they're like just picking up trash because they have to. It's like they pick up this rubbish because that is what keeps their island clean.
Yeah. And we interviewed Four Oceans CEO Alex Schulze on sustainability in the sea if you want to learn a little bit more about their business model. But he had told me in that interview, he was like, they're full time with mm-hmm. benefits and insurance for their families. And I was like, that is such a beautiful opportunity to locally employ, to create local jobs based in meaningful work. Mm-hmm. And when we met the guys, I was like, how long have you been for Four Ocean? And they're like, 3 years, 2 years, yeah. Like years. Like they're like, yeah, like this is, I get to help my home. I get to spend time outside mm-hmm. and I get to like benefits for my entire family, yeah. Which like is not something that is readily or abundantly available in Bali through jobs and employment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just super cool seeing how stoked they were to be there and like enjoying their work.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really good solution that people can take with them is like these employment models that sustain livable local job opportunities by leading like conservation or I guess in this case beach cleanup events, like mm-hmm. that is the direction we should go towards, is having like caring for the ocean be a sector of the economy that is funded through consumers like us.
Yeah, private economy.
Yeah, I think those were all of them, right? Are there any other takeaways from, we went to the Sea Turtle Sanctuary or Rehab at Hospital.
That was so cool. So that kind of falls under ecotourism, but
yeah, but rehab hospitals are like very common. We don't have one here, but there's like, they're in Florida and you can go visit. But I just think they're such a great, great, great ocean conservation solution.
Mm-hmm. It's an education tool. It's so cool.
And this one was free.
Yep.
It was called the Sea Turtle Education and Conservation Center. It was in Sanur or near Sanur. And I thought that it was, I think that these types of public engagement opportunities, and hospitals are a huge alternative to captive entertainment facilities, because as we stray away from demanding to see wildlife perform for us for entertainment, you can instead bring your children to see wildlife get cared for by wildlife veterinarians and then released back into the natural habitat.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that trip as well.
And I think during hatchling seasons, you can actually, for a donation, release it. But they're all donation run. And while we were there, we saw a public-private partnership between the local Indonesian government and colleges and the center training veterinary students on how to, like, assess, do health assessments on sea turtles, which I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. So
we also saw they actually just got in 15 turtles that were recovered from the black market. So they were still alive before they got, like, entered into the market. And they were, like, doing their, like, initial exams of these turtles to see if they can release them back in the wild. So that was super cool. And you never know what you're going to see when you're at somebody like this, but we got lucky.
Yeah, and we do know that, like, if you're having nests or incubating hatchlings, like, that has, like, various nuance and feedback and might not be always the best for sea turtles. But we think that, like, having a rescue facility and arm to rehab and release sea turtles from the black market or that are previously injured or entangled is, like, a huge conservation solution. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you go into hatchling rearing and release or not, like, having a hospital is a huge public awareness tool.
Totally.
As well as, like, a healing and transition or training hub for students in the next generation.
Yeah, that was, it was an awesome trip, jam-packed.
Jam-packed.
We learned so much.
And I'm so happy we filmed a lot of it so we can share it with you guys. But we just wanted to make sure that, like, you know, the reason we started Stoked on Solutions on the podcast, your episodes, is so that no matter where you live, you know that you can, like, take a solution that you learn on an episode like this and adapt it to maybe what your community needs. And I think that all of these can be adapted for a community, straight up.
Yeah, like, I agree.
All of them. So thanks for listening, guys. I'm so excited for what this year has in store. Hopefully we do more Stoked on Solutions.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So this has been another episode of Sustainability and the Sea.
See you next time.